now get some good news. I thought you ought to know the preliminary poll in the Dominican Republic has come in. 2,000 sample, 2,000. Balaguer, 51%. Bosch, 22%. Camano, 4%. It's going to continue, and we get a lot more. They're having it reviewed by experts to see whether it's true. This explains an awful lot, including the fact that the Bosch people are trying to get the election to go small.
Good. I read y'all's dispatch last night. I haven't gotten that to point out. Had a good day yesterday. I thought that the Harriman suggestion was excellent. I think that...
We'll have Saigon trouble with that, but I think we can work it out.
Why don't you just let him do it on his own?
We can do that. Just have him go and have a December trip to Paris.
Oh, yeah. He just...
Go and see the goal after the election. Might not be a bad cover.
I think that's good. I think the weakness of the government at this stage is that you ought to get Rusk and Ball and McNamara, maybe Clifford, yourself in a room and pick all the proposals to pieces. I thought your reference in there last night that you just Wheeler.
Yeah.
That you just can't take him through Wheeler's glasses or McNamara's glasses or my glasses. That our strength is going to be based on general overall viewpoint. And we observed from the past that our original judgment on Cuban Missile Crisis was what we wanted to do the first hour. What ultimately was done is quite different. The same thing with Vietnam. So I would much prefer, instead of chasing Rusk around the room as I did yesterday.
Did you get anywhere?
Yes, I got his thinking, which I think was very good, but on a good many things. But what I would like to have, if I could, when I come back before the series of meetings, I'd like for you to come to my bedroom and say to me, we've talked this over, and here's the preponderant weight of the evidence is here as I see it, as we see it, and here are the objections to it. Then we go into the meeting and you take the agenda as we used to and say, these are the things on it, now let's everybody speak frankly, and then summarize it and say, now here are the pros and here are the cons. And you can take the red candy or the vanilla, whichever you want, Mr. President. Here, I would take this if you're asking me. And then I think we get down to the nut cutting, so to speak, to the final wrap-up. As it is now, we just explore what could be, what might be, what maybe is. And if we don't have that crisp, so I think that you and Wheeler and McNamara and Rusk and Ball and perhaps Clifford ought to sit around your shop or the cabinet room and day on day until, say, Monday or whenever they think the time's got to come. I think that it ought to, very serious weight ought to be given to really breaking precedent somehow on budgets. I think it's huge. Ought to look over all the budgets we've ever had, and we ought to separate the regular budget from the Vietnam increased war budget.
Yeah.
I would like to, for instance, go on and get our supplemental out of the way and get whatever is a reasonable, honest figure there. Then for our next one, just maybe not included in the budget, but just say that for Vietnam, well, we're not including funds. We're going to get Westmoreland in here, and we're going to make our plans, and we're going to put it in a separate budget, and we'll send that up at a certain day.
Of course, that whole thing, the thing we were talking about in December down into January.
I would put the Vietnam in a separate one. Now they'll just say, "Oh, that can't be done. That's never been done. It's unthinkable to do it." But we did it this last year. If we hadn't, we'd already had controls and we'd had price increase. They're trying to break through right now. Martin's calling me this morning, and they're going to have an interest raise. And we're just going to let these newspapers, by our big microphone talk, get us into a hell of an economic thing if we're not very, very cautious. What I would do, first, I don't know how many men, how much equipment, how much buildup we've got to have. But I would like to take McNamara and Vance and Wheeler, and you and Comer and anybody that you want in that field, Rusk and Ball and whoever he wants in his field, Clifford. I would like to get that group together in a room and keep them there until they came up with what they thought we ought to do out there. Then I would give serious thought if they could, some way, our meeting, the lodge in Westmoreland at Honolulu, so there wouldn't be a wait too long. It wouldn't hurt us to do it at Christmas.
That's a great idea.
Sit down with them. I would have the peace things going all over the lodge. You got McNamara. I would give serious thought to letting Humphrey do something. I talked to Rusk about him going to Poland. He's not quite sure of that. He thinks the Polish think they resent our goings-on in the east-west trade, and they don't know. He doesn't know whether that would offend them or not. He's going to let me know, but I thought they handled a Gromowski real well, and I thought it's tribute to what we'd done.
Sure, Nixon can get a reception in Poland, Mr. President, sure as hell you can. I don't see any worry there, but maybe I missed something that I thought of.
Anyway, I would surely shove the Averill thing. I would think of anything else that could. I'm not sure I wouldn't let Tommy Thompson take a trip. Get him a little rest, get him a little fresh viewpoint, and get him a couple of assistants, and maybe when some of this group goes somewhere, just say that he's going to take off for 2-3 weeks, and let him go and sit around someplace. You always got Jim Bowen coming back and forth.
He's here now, and he's kind of hard-boiled. I don't think he gives you much of a look at peace.
No, I'm just saying that if he can do it, this fella just sits up there all the time.
The rank of ambassador and
I think that he can go out and see some of his old friends and maybe come in and say, "Why don't we try this?" I am not happy with the fact that I said, "Now, you've got till January the 1st to find me peace," and they haven't done any more than they have at it. I asked Russ, though, to do 2 or 3 things yesterday. I said, "When you get up in the morning, you say your number one priority today, Mr. Secretary, is to provide the President with the final recommendation when he comes back here as to what we do in the way of troops in Vietnam and the peace efforts in Vietnam. Let's right and left, let's have the prize fighter going to illustrate as I did once. So see what you can develop all your people during the day on those two things. Now the first thing would require you and Bundy and Ball, McNamara and Wheeler and Vance, and I would put Clifford in the group just to just say he's head of the foreign intelligence. And maybe Rayburn, I'd have a meeting in there, and then I'd spend the next few days trying to say, what are we going to recommend the President this week? Second, I would try to say what we can do in whether Mansfield comes up for anything, whether Humphrey could do anything, whether Harriman could do anything. Maybe Bundy can do something. Maybe he can, maybe you can do something. Maybe Thompson. Anybody that you've got any suggestion about. Maybe Bill Bundy ought to visit around and floor here. Now, I don't want to go with my hat in my hand, but I sure do want to do what we said in the last paragraph yesterday. Peace is coming. We want peace. We fight for peace. We work for peace. It's coming. I just want, and I don't think that we get that image over enough. So there are your two things. Now, on Santo Domingo, I want you to try to get Bunker to stay there till the election. He ain't got a damn thing to do with OAS. He can come home on the weekend. Let's get Tony Sullivan down there to help him. And let's get anybody else we can to help him. Tom Mann, Vaughn, anybody that can give him any help, supplies, political advice.
I know what I'd do if I'm going to give him that kind of help. I'd change the deputy chief of mission, and I know Sam to do it right here at town.
Well, I let him have whoever he wanted, like Vietnam, if he would be Fort Ruskin good. He said he would try it. He thought maybe he could. That would solve my...
Sure as hell cover that flank in iron. And do the job down there. Maybe even give that Flea Island some hope. That's cold.
I think that we foul our own nest more than anybody else. I don't think that things are going terrible in the world except in Vietnam, and I think we're doing so much better there, but we are a gloomy group, and we go to talking about what could happen in the way of inflation, and pretty soon we talk ourselves into it. We go to talking about how terrible things are. I look at the other leaders of the world, and I look at the Kennedy ratings in the world. This man that was perfect, who's perfect now as a world leader, by God, when he was the leader, the polls were not good at all, except for the period immediately following the Cuban Missile Crisis. And maybe in 1980, my polls will be good. But...
polls are all right now.
I don't see them when Gallup takes them with Wilson, who I like, and I think is a good fella, and I think he's got ass in his pants all the time, and is really plugging in everything. When I take them with him, and I take them to the press, evidently loves De Gaulle because he sees him once a year. But with De Gaulle and Earhart and with Wilson and with the Russians, I don't think we fare well even in their own countries. And the French poll yesterday was unbelievable. What the hell we've done to gain 5 points, I don't know. Scotty Reston and our own people just beat us over the head.
It's Vietnam, Mr. President.
I read yesterday in our papers here, and I pinched myself. The New York Times were just saying that we would tolerate no other ideas and no dissent and no freshness and no other viewpoints except our own. And here we just come out of a civil rights meeting where they did nothing except just get up and raise hell and spit in your face. We just gone through your special meeting up there with your crackpots. Wiesner and that group, and the Baltimore Sun says that Johnson wouldn't even listen to him. Said he wouldn't, his people just said it's just a shame that they can't have he listened to him. Well, hell, we'd listen to him for 3 days. I don't know any president that ever had as many people come in under his banner and cuss him, like the ICC and the, do you?
I must say, Mr. President, it didn't sound to me like repression that 3 days.
Well, I mean, do you know of any president...
They went away happy.
Do you know of any president...
No other country in the world does it that way. No other country. And I said that to them in their meeting.
We bring in the civil rights group, and they come right in, and by God, take their perch on the White House. And while they still got the hors d'oeuvres going, whiskey in one hand and a weenie sausage in the other, they just raise an unsured hell and say, it's got to be $100 billion. And you say, where'd you get the figure? We don't know. We're just $100 billion. That's all we know, and that's what we want before we go home tonight. And you just stay there and debate it with them. I spent an hour with them.
Well, you didn't have a space for these people, and they did go home happy, and they did have an absolutely free say, and the papers have been sniffy about it. Not all of them. Most of the press has been good on it. But,
don't you think, though, the general image is that our country is From the standpoint of international affairs, I read Hugh Seide the other day, and he says we never have made a foreign policy decision. Have no background and have never made one. Just done whatever.
How'd you make out with Orville yesterday?
I just did fine. I like Orville Freeman. Orville Freeman's a good man, an able man, and he's got the meanest job in the cabinet, and I didn't make any decision with him. I told him to go back and let's see if he's optimistic. These Minnesota boys are Walter Heller, Hubert Humphrey, and Orville Freeman. First thing you do, everything you say gets in the paper. You just got that to begin with. It's just, I'd rather have them have a transcript than to admonish them, because they just cannot keep it. Not one thing. They can't. If they go to bed with their wife, it'll appear in the paper the next morning. They just got to tell it. And it's in the water they drink out there. So I tried to be careful what I said so that he couldn't truthfully quote anything. I saw in Dick Wilson's column, who works for Look and the Coles, 3 days ago that Freeman had to rewrite his speech in Rome and all about it. Well, you know, I didn't tell him that.